straight out of Austin, Texas. It's On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com, with your hosts, Statesman sports columnists Cedric Golden and Kirk Bowles. Often imitated, never duplicated. Hear it here first, On Second Thought.
On Second Thought, episode 268, brought to you by Hook'em.com, our good friends at Bud Light. I'm Cedric Golden, here with the Duck, Kirk Bowles, and wow, Duck, we went to a practice. We saw a full-scale Texas practice. Is that a good thing after the way these quarterbacks played?
Now, why do you got to go there already? We're having
they just did. Duck, I've been accused of being negative, and I'm trying. I'm trying, Ringo, to be the shepherd. I want to be positive. But Hudson Card and Quinn Ewers just didn't play very well over 2 hours of practice on Tuesday night.
They didn't stand out. They didn't look polished. They didn't look crisp. The ball is either on the ground or in defenders' hands. I mean, we counted maybe 10, 11 interceptions. And these are just raw drills, no pass rush for the most part or anything. And it's not something you want to see. And this, Sev, as you know, was on top of the three picks that the two quarterbacks threw in the Saturday scrimmage last week. So it's got to worry Sarkisian. He just, especially on top of the injuries to Isaiah Nayor and Junior Aguilar, you lose an offensive lineman and your number two wide receiver and Roschon Johnson, your versatile jack of all trades, number two running back is hobbled a little bit. I don't know. It's just, I don't know. I don't know if there's not a sense of urgency.
There has to be. I'm sorry. There has to be. But you can't manufacture great play.
No, and you are what you are.
We know that's a pretty small sample size of a full summer of workouts. He told us that it's been fun watching these guys compete. But I have to say that his level of concern, I'm sure it had to go up even more after watching them throw. Duck, it was double-figure interceptions for what I saw between the two. Now, there are a couple of nice passes. Jordan Whittington went up and got one, but I just didn't see a clear-cut number one. I saw 1A and 1B, and I don't know which is which.
So are we left as a result kind of a grab bag thing? Does it make any difference? And will they rely on Bijan so much? They're a 60-40 run pass team. And how do you do that with four freshman offensive linemen in your two deep and your two line units? I mean, that's risky as well.
Very risky. I wrote it earlier, you know. Oh, we're going to have Olin Buchanan talking about the Aggies coming up here pretty soon. But and things are a little rosier in College Station. But, of course, we haven't watched them practice. So maybe A&M's having some similar things with their quarterback battle. But I just when I watched it, you know, I went in glass half full and just, I don't know, I just didn't see it. And hopefully we caught them on just a bad day, and then it's going to be better when we see them again, which I guess will be the opener on September 3rd against Louisiana Monroe. But, man, just for that one little snippet, Duck, they did not look good.
Let me ask you this. Hudson Card started two games. He was Sarkisian's pick to run this team. Started two games, got lifted after seven quarters for Casey Thompson, and Hudson Card played in a whole bunch of games, threw over 50 passes. Could he be the safer pick over maybe a Quinn Ewers with bigger upside?
Man, that's a really good question. Because I mean, this time last year, Duck, remember when he surprised us all when he named Hudson Card the starting quarterback, and we thought that it would be Casey Thompson, right? And then he gives him the quick hook at Arkansas. The difference this year is I think he kind of knew he had a nice little ace up his sleeve with Casey, because Casey lit it up in that bowl game the year before, and then Casey had shown an ability to make plays in the spring and the summer. So when KC started making plays after taking over, we weren't that shocked. Or we weren't because we thought that he'd shown us that he could do that. I don't know that he knows if he starts Hudson and gives him the quick hook like he could do in, against Alabama if things get really ugly or if he gets hurt in that game. There's not that security blanket mentality when you go to a Quinn Ewers who has not thrown a pass in college football. The last pass he threw in a football game was at South Lake Carroll. So the uncertainty around this quarterbacking situation has to have this head coach and Kyle Flood up nights. They have to be up nights wondering how they're going to get it done. It's going to be Bijan heavy. You can't run him into the ground.
No.
Just can't run him into the ground. And I wrote last week that those backup running backs, the Roschon Johnsons, the Keelan Robinson, the Jonathan Brookses, those kind of guys are going to have to play a pivotal role in games where Texas is blowing out the competition. He's not going to say this to Bijan Robinson, but if it's me, and I'm Sark, I'm mumbling to my coaches, sorry, kid, you might not end up in New York City this year. Oh. We're gonna win games. We can't be giving you the ball 30 times like Texas did with Ricky Williams. Can't do that because you just don't have good enough quarterbacking to hold up your end. They're going to need him in the big games against Oklahoma, against Alabama. He's going to have to carry it 20 to 25, 30 times to get if they're going to be able to win these games, because we haven't seen any evidence that these quarterbacks are going to light anybody up.
Well, he probably won't be in New York if the odds are they're not going to be a great team.
That's true.
Players, great players, and Bijan's a great player. We all know that. But if you go 5-7, 7-5, even 8-4, you're not going to New York unless you rush for 2,000 yards.
And Ricky went in 9-3, didn't he?
Yeah, but would they win 9 games in that one? But, and here's the other thing, too. There's more pressure on the quarterback decision this year. Sark and his staff had house money last year, your first year. You still got the honeymoon. But now, after a 5-7 year, if you compound that and have another losing record or even an average season, then the whispers get a little louder. Like, well, maybe he's not the quarterback guru we thought Sarkisian was. So that's why this is a lot more critical decision this year than last year.
It is. And the one thing that I'll say that makes me feel pretty good, and it might not be about this season, but definitely next season, I see some good looking kids on that offensive line.
Oh, yeah.
I see some good looking kids up front.
Definitely.
Kelvin Banks Jr. is a grown ass man already.
Mm-hmm.
He's just a freshman. DJ Campbell, grown man. We know Jake Majors has the pedigree. Yeah. Christian Jones is better on the right side than he is on the left. I'd rather start a true freshman with more upside over there than Christian Jones, who just appeared to be overwhelmed at several points last season. So Hayden Carner is in there. So young up front, but talented up front. And maybe that'll pay dividends next season. I don't know about this season. I just wonder, Duck, I'll ask you, what's a good season stat-wise for these quarterbacks? What do you have to have for Texas to win 7 or 8 games? Maybe not.
I think you got to hit 20 touchdown threshold. You know, you may not hit 26 or 28 or 30 or beyond, but I think to take any pressure off Bijan, you got to hit 20 and you got to hold your interceptions under 12 or 10. You throw 18 touchdowns with 12 interceptions, that's a losing season.
But that's about where I am right now with them, Duck. I'm down on these quarterbacks right now.
Yeah,
I hope, and I know people out there think that I'm being too negative and I'm, you know, Golden's just a hater. Let me keep it 100 here. I want the Texas Longhorns to have a good season. I want them to go undefeated, Doug. And they're not. They're obviously not going to go unbeaten. When they're good, it's better for us.
Sure it is.
Guys at the game. It's better for business. It's better for readership. Sure. We want them to do well. We like Steve Sarkisian. Not that anybody asks us. I like Sark. He's pleasant. He answers the questions, and he's got an enthusiasm for the job that reminds me of Charlie Strong. I just hope that's where the similarities begin and end. Results wise, we don't need to see another 5-7. We don't want to see him get whacked before he even gets started. So, and we felt the same way about Chuck. So, I think that 20-22 touchdowns passing and 4 or 5 rushing. We take a little heat off of Bijan. If that happens, and if they don't get, and if this offensive line grows up fast, and this is the big one, Doug, if the defense, which gave up 425 yards a game, if they can get that thing under 400, and Doug, I mean, that's not like a world beater. If you're giving up 390 yards a game, you're not a world beater, but you're like 75th or 80th in the country. I think Texas can rock with that. I do. I don't expect them to be a Big 12 championship type team, but I think they can rock with the defense that's given up 380. That's some bend and don't break numbers, Doug. Limit the big plays and be a ball control offense where, I know they hate this term, where whichever quarterback starts is a game manager and who grows into the position. We'll see.
It's not Quinn Ewers' style, though. It's not in his DNA to be a game manager. So, you know, the other thing, too, is we haven't mentioned Roschon Johnson hurt his ankle, and you pray that's not a high ankle sprain that lingers because he's the real deal, you know. Now, I love Jonathan Brooks and Jaden Blue. Keelan Robinson, I think, has speed out the wazoo, but he's not going to be a blocker. You know, you're not going to trust him on third down as a pass protector, but, you know, he can also turn the field upside down. So
I hope Roschon's not out for extended time.
Well, you hope not. You never know. And they got to stay healthy. They got to stay healthier than they are right now. And they, I don't know how many more crucial season-ending injuries they could endure. So, because it's a thin team, you know.
There's not a team in America that won't feel the loss of their most experienced interior lineman and their number two receiver. Everybody's right. Going to feel that.
Yeah.
And the season hasn't started. Yeah, and the season hasn't even started. Everybody's going to feel that impact, even in Alabama. Mm-hmm. You know, when John Michi got hurt last year,
yeah,
in the championship game, they felt that. Yeah. They felt that, Doug. They felt that. So I hope that Roschon is not a high ankle sprain. Those can linger for a month or even more. Hopefully it's just precautionary and he will be back. But man, if I'm Sark, I'm like, man, if I can just get through these next 2 weeks without a crushing injury, we might be okay.
Yeah, and you know, we mentioned the wide receiver, you mentioned Nayor being hurt. You know, I still like their receivers. Xavier Worthy is All-American caliber. Mm-hmm. We all know that. 12 touchdowns last year, just under 1,000 yards. He's the real deal. Jordan Whittington, I think, can play in the NFL. Just matters staying healthy, and he's a yards after catch kind of guy, which is what they need. Now, they're going to need somebody else to step up now. Tariq Milton was projected as the slot receiver backup to Jordan Whittington. He's a super senior, has a lot of experience. Troy O'Meary, he's had a history of knee problems, and who knows if what they're going to get out of him. And yeah, I know you make fun of me, but these tight ends, they got a glut of them. They better have some of them produce, whether it's Jatavion Sanders or Jaleel Billingsley or Gunnar Helm or Juan Davis. One or two of them going to have to step up, especially now with this kind of quarterback quandary they're in.
And who's the best friend of a young quarterback?
I would say a and a strong running game.
Remember when Sammy Ehlinger took over? Him and Cade Brewer became big buddies. He was dumping that thing off to Cade Brewer on the regular. They might be better, but I don't get excited about tight ends at Texas. It's been a minute since JerMichael Finley or David Thomas have come through here, Bo Skeezy. It's been a minute since we've seen those guys.
Sampleton. They've had them. It's just been a while.
Blaine Irby had promise, but he shredded his knee. They haven't been a tight end offense for quite a while. Mm-hmm. So there might be some dump offs as this offensive line gets its sea legs. There might be some.
It's more than dump offs. I think there'll be a big part of the thing with Nayor getting hurt.
I'll take that bet. We're gonna do a segment next week.
I don't think it's a dump off situation.
We're gonna do a segment leading as either next week or the week after, leading into the season, where we're gonna have 10 bets.
Okay.
We're gonna have 10 bets. We're gonna come up with some questions. I'll reach out to our viewership and our listenership to see what questions they want us to bet on. And one of them has to be the tight ends. We're going to do an over-under on the tight end position, and you're going to lose. You will lose that bet.
I don't know where you're coming from. I mean, you had them 9-3 in the spring. You know, you were high on them in the spring. What's happened?
I saw the quarterbacks.
Ooh.
And then they lost Junior Angelo. Mm-hmm. And then they lost Isaiah Nair. And now Roshon Johnson may have a high ankle sprain. And they got to play Alabama in the second game.
Play doom and gloom.
When
does Chris Beard open the season? The Moody Center?
I'm not the one writing about hoops. I'm not the one writing about hoops right now. That's you.
You sound like you're ready to.
I'm not. I'm looking forward to football season, fam. I am. I love football season. I love Texas football. I love covering it. I just don't have that feeling that they're going to be a player this year. And if these quarterbacks – just surprise us and confound us, and one of them has a Casey Thompson type of presence before he got hurt, Doug, then they're going to be decent. But I bet you can't sit there right now on August the 18th, 2022, 2 weeks before the season starts, and tell me they're going to go 9-3.
I'm not going to tell you that. I don't see that. Gonna make a lot of progress.
Don't get mad at me for being real.
I'm being real.
Hey, before we get to Buchanan, I know Longhorn Nation saddened by the loss of a legendary running back, Steve Wooster. Big Woo was he and Chris Gilbert were two of the first superstar running backs on this, in this team's great history. Did you know him very well, Duck? Because I know that was your day. That's your age group.
Well, I didn't really. He came to Texas when I was still in high school, but I was here to see the last couple of years when he played, and he was the consummate fullback. He was the workhorse, the rugged guy that, you know, it pained you to have to tackle him. He brought the collision to you, and he was so durable. And, the recruiting class, the Wooster bunch, you know, I talked to Bill Little this week. He said, well, Bill Ellington actually called him the Wooster crowd, and it kind of evolved into the Wooster bunch. But it was a heralded group. There were like 18 core players, a lot of them out of the Houston area. And it was the class that produced two national titles and three Southwest Conference championships and a 32-1 record. And he was one of those that came with such huge billing and huge expectations and lived up to it. And so it would not be overstating it to say, you know, he was the Arch Manning of his time as far as a recruit, because he just rewrote all the records at Bridge City. He had 38 100-yard games. 38.
That's crazy.
And he had like 28 in a row. You know, they won their state championship, beat McKinney like, I don't know, 30-6, and McKinney giving up like 16 points a game, you know. So he was the real deal. He was a ladies' man.
Nice. Just
you
like
had a
you, Doug. Just
party.
like him.
You know, we would have liked covering him. I'll put it that way. And it's sad to see him leave us so early, but he's certainly the one that deserved his due because he was a great player.
On Second Thought.
Well, Duck, we are, you know, we've had the doom and gloom of the Longhorns, but things are looking up in Aggie Town. A&M coming off an 8-4 record. They are number 7 in the coaches poll, number 6 in the AP poll, just behind Notre Dame, who's going to get rocked in the opener against Ohio State. So we had to bring on our guy, Olin Buchanan of TexAgs.com, to get the temperature in College Station. OB, what's shaking?
Temperature's hot.
Nice.
It's hot.
It's all hot.
Yeah, I mean, literally and figuratively.
Right. So the question is, OB, are the Aggies overrated, underrated, or right where they should be preseason?
You know, I would say this. I think they deserve to be anywhere between 6 and 11. So if you say 6, okay. There's an awful lot of talent, NFL caliber talent on this roster. But there are some legitimate question marks. So because of those questions, you know, if you said they should not be in the top 10, I wouldn't put them lower than 11. Mm-hmm. But because of the fact that a lot of those questions concern guys that have either played well in small glimpses, like say a Fadell Diggs or Shamar Turner, or, you know, guys who are really highly rated recruits. So I like to think of it as, there's a lot of questions, but it's an open book test. It might be pretty easy to find those answers, but until you actually have those answers, you have to have a certain amount of apprehension. And so, I'd have no issue with them if they were ranked lower, but you know, the potential is there for them to be much higher. And if some of those questions aren't asked or are not answered in the right way, the definitely potential is there for them to, you know, fall and slip and maybe not be that high.
I think they're in a good spot. I mean, 34-14 under Jimbo, 3-1 in bowl games. And 4 years ago, there were people nationwide going, oh my God, they're overpaid for Jimbo Fisher. And I was one of those that go, hey, if you want the guy and you got to pay to get him, you go get him. They crossed off a huge box bringing in a proven winner. And the recruiting classes have been great. What's been his demeanor this summer, OB? He has to be excited because we all know to make a real run at a national championship, you usually got to start out in that top 10 and just navigate your way up.
He seems to be very confident. He's always been a very cooperative coach. Maybe that hasn't always been the case here, but always a very cooperative coach. But he's even been a little bit more fun. And it just strikes me that, you know, I know you like to play poker, Sid. He strikes me as that guy who's, you know, has already got what they call it, big slick in his hand. And there might be an ace on the table. You know, he looks like he thinks that he has the look of a guy that thinks he has a really good football team.
Nice.
And he should. You know, it's interesting you say that, Sid, because I think where there have been 8 years of the CFP already? I think it's 8. And the 4 teams came from the top 6 preseason every year. So that's a good omen for the Aggies to be in that kind of company. The flip side is, you know, Jimbo's one of it's 4 active coaches who have won a national title, you know, along with Dabo and Nick and our friend Mac Brown. So, you know, he's in elite company. That said,
well, OB, and then there's Kirby Smart.
Kirby. Don't forget Kirby.
Yeah, Kirby, the latest one. So 5. So is there any pressure on Jimbo, you know, going 8-4 last year, not being ranked? You know, this is what year 5 for him, right?
Yeah, well, I think first of all, how much pressure can there be with a guy with $81 million guaranteed to come to him?
Okay. Different pressure. Different
right. So, yeah, but I always hear that.
Why didn't we become coaches?
Yeah, I always hear that, you know, people have me on other places around the country and say, is he on the hot seat? I'm like, the hot seat? You got to pay this guy $81 million over the next 9 years, no matter what. But, yeah, I mean, I think there's a – it's time to start saying, okay, if not now, when? Are you – is A&M going to be a legitimate contender? Now, first of all, they were in 2020, and you can, you know, call me an apologist or whatever. They got hosed by not getting in the playoff that year. When you're only – you know, when you go 8-0 against the SEC – and your only loss is to Alabama, and then you look how Ohio State got in. Remember the Big Ten changed their own rules so Ohio State could get in and Notre Dame? So
and Ohio State got – isn't that the year Ohio State got worked at the house by Oregon, or was that last season?
No, I think that was last season. That was the year they're –
yes. Iowa worked them.
Right. Their only win was the win of significance that year was Indiana.
And we know why. They weren't the brand name Ohio State.
Right. And so was Notre Dame the brand name.
Yes.
So, but A&M is probably a better team. That said, last year I thought they would have had a big year. They didn't start two freshmen in the offensive line by design. And I'm hearing that Zach Calzada may not get the start at Auburn.
It wouldn't shock me.
So, average. You know, you were put in a position – people don't talk about that. A rash of injuries at receiver too. Now you can say that's excuses for them not winning 10 games. That's okay. But it's also facts that, you know, teams that lose their starting quarterback typically aren't going to be as good without them. Now, sometimes it works out, but typically it's not. And they were on the cusp of winning 10 games last year. You know, they gave one away against Mississippi State. They gave one away against LSU and, they threw it away against Ole Miss with 2 fourth-quarter interceptions, 1 for a touchdown and 1 set up a touchdown. So with better quarterback play, they could have won 10 games last year. So I think if you don't think they haven't made that turn under Fisher, you're really not paying attention or you just don't want to.
You brought up quarterbacks. Haynes King, the son of the Longview head coach. Max Johnson, the son of wasn't that your my friend Chris Brown from back in the day? His former campmate Brad Johnson. How's that thing looking? And is it Haynes? Because that was the feeling I got in the spring.
Yeah, I don't know how it is over there in Austin with Sarkisian, but here we don't get to go to the practices, right? And we're
see one OB.
You saw one last night, right?
Yeah,
unfortunately.
I was asked on some radio program. They said, "How does the quarterback look based on what you've seen?" I said, "Well, I don't think they're going to pull any hamstrings because they've been stretching really well." But what we hear is that Haynes is looking really good, and that his speed gives them a lot of dimension, adds a lot of dimension to the offense. They can do a whole lot more with him. That said, when asked last week about it, Jimbo Fisher adamantly maintained that no one has an edge in the competition and that they've been all getting the same amount of reps with the same first team, second team, you know. And lately I've heard that Connor Wigman, the five-star freshman, is a guy that's been turning heads. So I don't think they'll go with a freshman this year out of the gate. But if I had to bet on it, I would put my money on Haynes King. But I'm not saying that's secretariat in that horse race. You know, this could be a close horse race, but I would bet on Haynes.
You know, and Max seems like the perfect backup. You know, you got a senior, you got a veteran. You've had a guy with a lot of SEC starts under his belt, whereas Haynes King, you know, he's played parts of two games. So, but I agree with you. He's got mobility. He's got upside. He's got that extra dimension. So it just seems like Max would make the better backup, you know, if Haynes King, you know, has too many turnovers because he, you know, he likes to, you know, push things and maybe a little more risk, but that's kind of his flair, isn't it?
Well, if we don't know. I mean, he threw an interception as a freshman at Alabama. I thought his receiver did absolutely nothing to help him out. He had three interceptions against Kent State last year. Now, Jimbo will tell you two of them were not on Haynes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, maybe they were, maybe they weren't. Still three interceptions. But, yeah. Of course, I saw Johnny Manziel throw three interceptions in a couple of games. So, you know, that happens. Who knows? It's one of those things where nobody's really good until they get a chance to play. I mean, everybody that's good at one time had question marks around them. And, you know, so maybe he's going to turn out to be really good. You know, I know that young guy that Kirk didn't vote for the Heisman, he turned out to be pretty good. But and you thought he was going to be good. But until he actually played, you know, you had to have some apprehension.
You had to bring up spilt milk, didn't you? Just had to do it.
Well, so, you knew I wouldn't.
It's more spoiled than spilt.
One of the questions, offensive line, they lose Kenyon Green.
Yes.
Multiple All-American, but their offensive line, to me, looks great. And I don't know if it's as good or maybe better. And you might want to relate the story with Mr. Fathery that we shared at SEC Media Days, Olin.
Well, I'll just say this. They're going to be better. I would bet on them being better at four of the five positions in the offensive line, but they're not going to be as good as they were at left guard. And they've got like four guys that are competing for that, and all four of them are supposed to be pretty good, but none of them are going to be as good as Kenyon Green.
Right.
But Bryce Foster and Reuben Fothery started as freshmen. They were both freshman All-Americans, and I think they'll be better as sophomores. I mean, that stands to reason. Layden Robinson is a preseason All-American at right guard, played hurt all last year, but he played, and he played well. And then Trey Zune is a redshirt freshman that's going to start at left tackle. He's replacing Jameer Johnson, who is a transfer portal guy from Tennessee that once he got here, they found out he had a bad knee. And in fact, he didn't play in that win over Alabama. They had to shuffle their line and move Kenyon Green out the left tackle in that game. And they started a kid from Hallsville, Texas, named Blake Traynor at guard. So I think in those four positions are going to be better. But I think the question is how good that offensive line is going to be is you focus at that left guard and you know you're going to take a step down, but is it going to be like stepping off the curb or stepping off a cliff? Now, the thing about Reuben Fothery is his first start was against Arkansas, and he had some issues. Arkansas won the line of scrimmage in that game, no doubt about it. But 3 weeks later, they're playing Alabama. And he played great. And, in fact, in the last two drives, the one for a game-tying touchdown in the last 5 minutes, one for a game-tying touchdown and one for the game-winning field goal, Alabama's putting Will Anderson on him. You can go back and watch the tape. Number 31's on him. And in that period, Will Anderson he won the matchup. Will Anderson could not get to the quarterback. In fact, he does a great job in pass protection and stonewalling Will Anderson on the 25-yard pass to Anaya Smith that tied the game. Will Anderson finished that game, I think, with only like five, six tackles, no sacks. Mm-hmm. It was one of only two games that he didn't get a sack. And their Alabama coaches purposely put him on Reuben Fothery in those last two series because they're thinking, hey, we got to get a stop. Let's put our best guy on their true freshman. And quite frankly, in those series, the true freshman won.
So tell our audience.
Is that the guy that you went up to Will Anderson and asked, do you know who Reuben Fothery is?
Right.
I read that on Texas.
Yeah. And he said, no, never heard of him. And you know what? I was expecting him to either say, yeah, he's a good player. And I'd say, hey, the guy that's supposedly the number one defense player in the country just said, yeah, that, you know, gave acknowledgement to Reuben Fothery. Or had he asked me, because I understand a lot of players don't know guys by their names.
They know numbers.
If he would have said, refresh my memory or who is he? And I would have said number 76 of Texas A&M. He might have said, oh, yeah, that guy. But when he just dismissed it, you know, that made for a story. That's some kind of underhanded thing that Kurt Bowles might do to get a story. And so,
there was a meltdown among Alabama fans.
There was. And that's what we do. But it's still true. You know, they can get all mad if they want. But the fact of the matter is, Ruben Fothery won those matchups. Yeah. So I think he's a guy that just showed the tip of the proverbial iceberg last year for his potential. And I think he's going to be a great player. Not just a good one. I think he's going to be a great player for A&M.
And speaking of being mad, Jimbo and Nick have patched things up. I understand.
Have they?
Are they going on vacation together now? That was pretty disingenuous, Jimbo, saying, oh, it was a big misunderstanding. I got all the respect for them.
It wasn't. I understood perfectly what he was
saying. Yeah, we all did.
Well, I'm sure that Greg Sankey, the commissioner, that I'm sure that he had some hand in mending the fences, so to speak. But look, two very competitive guys, two very successful guys, used to be friends. Maybe they still are. Maybe they're not. But I think a lot of us would react strongly if you were suggested that you did something underhanded to do your job well. And that's what Nick Saban did. Now, that said, you could say maybe Jimbo's reaction went over the top. And okay, that's fair. But if someone says, hey, the only reason you did your job well is because you did something, while not illegal, sounds, you know, to say, oh, you bought your whole class. Well, the fact is, a big part of that class was committed even before NIL was approved. And then, you know, they had, you know, this most of a lot, if not most, a lot of recruiting is done the junior year. And that was the year A&M went 8-9-1 and should have been in the playoff. And then those guys that you recruited decided to come to a game, and what game they're going to come to, the Alabama game. They saw the way that atmosphere was. And then you see what all A&M has to offer. And I know some don't understand that, but there is a lot to offer that A&M has. So is it really that big of a stretch that A&M recruited well, especially when Jimbo Fisher is recruited in the top 10 every full class that he's been there? That first year, you know, that first year he showed up in December, and that was when they had the early signing period started. But ever since that year, you know, he's been in the top 10, including number 3. So say, oh, all of a sudden you can't have a good class. Well, you know, Jimbo recoiled at that and, you know, made some accusations himself that raised some questions, like when he said, well, ask Nick Saban what he did to get all those great recruiting classes. Mm-hmm. So we did ask him. We asked Jimbo Fisher, what do you mean? He said, now you're going to have to ask somebody else. Wait a minute, you're the guy that brought it up. So please elaborate. And he wouldn't. But I'll say this. I was in Destin, Florida, and people asked Billy Napier, the Florida coach, and Kirby Smart, the Georgia coach, who both coached under Saban, asked him about that. Hey, do you know anything he did? Maybe like, and neither one of them would touch it. They said, oh, he's just a great coach, and I have a lot of respect for him. You know how they do. So
it's like asking if Michael Corleone's a bad guy. There's certain questions you just don't answer.
So, you know, what all that did was it made for a lot of good off-season fodder. And I know there are a couple of guys at Alabama when we were at SEC Media Days, Kirk and attest to this. They were saying, well, you know, we're going to bring all that to the field on October 8th. You know, that's when we're going to settle family business. So,
Olin, they have not talked, have they? As far as you know, Nick and Jimbo.
Well, I think they had to have some conversation when at the SEC spring meetings, because they were like sat next to each other or close to each other at one of those coaches meetings. So I'm sure they've had some kind of talk, but as far as like,
no private conversation.
Private conversations of, like I said, mending the fences or whatever. To my knowledge, that's not the case, I think. But you know what? I think maybe that whole friendship thing between them, that whole story might have been a little bit exaggerated too. I don't think it was like Daryl Royal and Frank Broyles talking to each other on the phone all the time and playing golf all the time in the off season. You know, maybe it was, but you know, I suspect that might not have been the case.
Yeah.
I'm really excited about this matchup, and I'm excited about the season overall, OB. I'm just going to put it out there. 23 of the last 26 seasons, the Aggies have had at least four losses. This feels different. This feels different. Now, over the years, we've gone game by game on that schedule. You'll call me and let's knock them out real fast. I'm going to go down the list, OB. You go win or loss. Duck, you keep score. And we'll see what OB's record's going to be.
All right.
Sam Houston.
I'll take that and A&M win.
App State.
You know what? They're going to make you work, but that's an A&M win.
Miami.
That's an A&M win. That's an A&M win.
And then the big one. I think I'm probably going to be at this one. Jerry World, Arkansas.
Yeah. Like I said, Arkansas just beat A&M last year. There's no other way around it. And yet A&M still had the ball and a chance to tie in the fourth quarter. And then Calzada threw the interception off his center's helmet. And it set up a field goal, and that was it. I'll take A&M this year. I really do. That's not coming from a place of saying I'm just going to rah-rah for A&M. I'm just looking at better quarterback play. And quite frankly, I think they're going to be better at running back, which is crazy to say without Isaiah Spiller, and he's doing well.
I like that. I'm sorry. I like
that. My A-chain is a different kind of guy. And making him your feature back, I think, just makes him better. Plus, Treylon Burks isn't playing wide receiver for Arkansas anymore.
They probably won't be as good, will they?
No, probably not.
Arkansas folks are going to be better, but,
They got a tough schedule, too. But, we got four wins. Then we got
Mississippi State. The Fighting Mike Leeches went to College Station and surprised the Aggies. And kept me from going to the Alabama game because I'm like, I'm not going to go watch them get crushed by Alabama if they can't beat Mississippi State at home.
Yeah, A&M they got in the red zone four times against Mississippi State and kicked field goals on three of them.
Can't do that.
They move the ball within the 20s. Now, I hear people say Mississippi State's going to be better. I don't know how you take Charles Cross off their offensive line. And that guy who was the transfer from Cal, I can't think of his name right now, who was their best receiver and he was really good. Had two touchdowns against A&M. And some of the guys they lost on their defense, like Aaron Brule, who's now going to be a starting linebacker at Michigan State. I don't know how you lose those guys and say you're going to be better. That's one of those games I thought with adequate quarterback play, A&M would have won. So now I understand Starkville has been a house of horrors for the Aggies. I mean, there have been
a lot
good
of other teams too. Yeah.
Yeah, but there's been good A&M. Go back and look at what they've done in Starkville. And when they've won, it's been really good years. And when they've lost, it's been really disappointing years.
So who you got?
I'll take the Aggies. I think they're going to be really good.
So now they're 5-0 and probably ranked 2 or 3 in the country, and they go to big bad Alabama at Tuscaloosa.
And I think anybody would say that they'll pick Alabama. And
Will you?
As of today, I'll pick. You know, I would say that Alabama should win that game.
What a turncoat! I can't believe that. Okay,
I try to look at things objectively.
Then they go.
No one's watching this.
Then off week and then at South Carolina.
Yeah, I know South Carolina is supposed to be better with Spencer Rattler and everything, but I'm still taking the Aggies in that game.
Okay. All right. Then you got home games against Ole Miss and Florida back to back.
And it was Ole Miss, Florida. And I don't know how good Florida is supposed to be. I think maybe they're making good, but I would take A&M in that one. The Ole Miss game, that's going to be tougher, but at home, and that's not Matt Corral playing quarterback. And you saw what they were without Matt Corral quarterback last year in their bowl game.
That's right.
So as of today, I would take A&M to win that game.
Okay. At War Eagle.
We might be looking at the worst Auburn team since 2012.
Ooh, ooh.
I'm taking A&M over Auburn, wouldn't you?
I would.
All day long.
Yeah. Then you got
before we go any further, yeah, they're going to beat UMass, okay?
Okay.
Which one of these games would you guys in Texas, in Austin, would say, Olin's crazy, they're not going to win that one?
Well, we know you're crazy, but I would, you know.
Which one would you disagree with me?
I would say beware. I don't know what App State has coming back, but they're used to big games and environments. So, you know, until I think the Aggies are going to hit their stride the longer the season goes, because you got a new quarterback. You got a young O-line and D-line. So there may be some growing pains in September. So, you know, I'm not saying the Appalachian State's going to upset them, but, you know, Arkansas's a rivalry game. Arkansas's feeling chesty. So, but I think it's possible. Sam, do you got any issue with any of his wins so far?
Mine's Mississippi State. I mean, Mike Leach at home always seems to beat somebody he shouldn't beat. And that would be the trap game for me.
Well, and you know what? I think and I'm going to take A&M over LSU too to wrap it up. Okay,
11-1, 11. Right.
But now wait a minute. Now I'm going to say one of those games that I think they're going to win, they're going to lose.
Okay,
because you're 10-2.
So I'm going to say really 10-2. I don't know which game. I think they look like they're going to beat every one of those teams. I think they look like the more talented team in every one of those games except Alabama, but I've been covering the SEC a long time, and I mean, Alabama loses games that they're not supposed to lose. You know, I've seen South Carolina beat a Georgia team that I think played for the national championship or close to it. So it's such a grind that it's not, I mean, you almost expect the team to lose one that they're not supposed to.
Right.
And I don't know who it's going to be. It could be Arkansas. It could be Mississippi State. Yeah. It could be Ole Miss. I think they'll beat LSU here.
Yeah. Well, that's, you said that's the beast that is the SEC. And as far as the class that Jimbo bought, you got 6 5 stars, Walter Nolan, D lineman. You got Evan Stewart, the wide receiver, is just tearing it up. Do you think both those guys will start? And how many in the class you think will start or be big contributors, OB?
The starter, Evan Stewart, I think he'll start from day one. And they're going to hope that he has the freshman impact that Christian Kirk had. And if he does that, then Evan Stewart might be the most important player on the offense, with the exception of the quarterback, because he's the missing piece, supposedly, that provides that deep threat and makes those safeties come out of the box. Because if you move those safeties back 5 more yards, and then Devon Achane gets past the first line of defense, he has a little bit more room to operate, and he can turn a 10-yard gain into a, you know, 70-yard gain. So, but plus you need that guy that can just give you a you know, 50-yard touchdown.
Yeah, stretch the field. So yeah, any others besides those two, maybe?
Freshman, maybe before the end of the year, I could see Jake Johnson starting at tight end. Max's brother, who is the number one tight end prospect in the country. And I wouldn't be surprised to see Walter Nolan. You know, if you believe those recruiting services and the rankings they give the players, the ratings, Walter Nolan has a higher rating than Miles Garrett did as a freshman. Wow. So if he can come in and be anything like Miles, you know, they'll take that. But the thing is that A&M has some pretty good defensive ends that haven't played a lot, but they feel really good about, like Tumisi Adeleye and Fidel Diggs. And so the thing about all those good defensive linemen, I think a lot of them are going to make a contribution right away. I don't know that they have to have them come in and start. Like Miles had to start. I think A&M had like 15 sacks the whole year before, and Miles came in and got like 12. I think this is a different situation. Now, I'm not saying that one of them, like, and it's probably Walter Nolan's probably the guy that's most likely to start. Even so, though, I saw this kid from Florida, Shamar Stewart, up close, and that guy's freaking enormous. Let's see if he's as good as he is big. But Walter Nolan is as highly thought of as he is. If he's half the player that we keep hearing he is, then it wouldn't surprise me if he got into the starting lineup. Denver Harris as a corner. You know, last year they started Tyreek Chappelle out of necessity as a true freshman at corner. Maybe, if not him, maybe a guy like Bryce Anderson out of Beaumont, who's a freshman out here. He's done some really good things at safety. But as far as the ones I would just really feel strong, without a doubt, Stewart, wouldn't be surprised to see Johnson and Nolan. Those would be three that I'd say have a better than average chance of starting. But a lot of them, I think, will see action and, you know, contribute a significant amount.
A lot of depth, a lot of athletes.
Well, remember, they've recruited well. They've had top 10 recruiting classes for the last 3 or 4 years. So, yeah, this is a great recruiting class, but it's not like, you know, that they were barren of talent anyway. And so they have other guys that have been here that were highly rated recruits, and now it's their time to step up.
Yeah, the last question I have is DJ Durkin, the new DC, replacing Mike Elko. Will fans and media notice a change, and how might the approach or attack be different under Durkin?
You know, I don't know how different it'll be. I don't think the schemes are going to be a whole lot different. I think it's just going to come down to game day, how you decide to call play. You know, Mike had this great sense of when to bring the safeties or even a cornerback or whoever on a blitz. And quite often, you know, he just seemed to have a knack for a feel for the right time and the right guy. Is Durkin going to be able to do that? I don't know, but I will say this about DJ Durkin. When he was a defensive coordinator at Florida, they had a good defense. He was a defensive coordinator at Michigan. They had a really good defense. He went to Ole Miss, and 2 years ago, I thought Ole Miss's defense was one of the worst I'd seen. I mean, they were just lackluster. And 2 years later, I mean, last year they had Sam Williams, good player, really good player, with the Cowboys now. So they had him at defensive end. They had a linebacker transfer from Maryland and a safety transfer from Navy, and they were pretty good. But you didn't look at that defense and think, outside of Sam Williams, they had anybody that was, you know, really got your attention at how good they are. And yet they played pretty good defense.
Yeah. He's a good coach.
So let's see what he does with more talent to work with.
Well, be always a pleasure. The Aggies, he's got them at 10-2, guys.
Well, what would y'all put them at? What would y'all put them at?
I think I had them 9-3.
9-3? Okay.
I think they can go 10-2. I, you know, we didn't talk much about Antonio Johnson or Edrian Cooper on defense. They've got some
Monty Richardson,
some playmakers on that defense. I think they're very capable of going 10-2. And if things break their way and the quarterback plays consistent 11-1, I do think it's possible. That's why, you know, I had them number 7 on my AP ballot. So I think they're a legit contender.
Yeah. And you know what? And I know it's a tough schedule and everything, but they don't have Kansas on the schedule.
No.
Now, you know, I had to do that.
So where do you have the Horns? Did you have A&M at 11-1?
You know what? I pick Texas to win the Big 12 every year, and they let me down. I pick
not
them
this year. You're not picking them this
and
year.
And I'm not going to pick them this year, but I bet you they finished third.
What's their record?
Probably 9-3.
Whoo!
8-4, 9-3.
He didn't go to last night's practice, did he?
I did not. I heard some bad things.
We have not been the most positive people.
Come on. You know they got to beat Texas Tech. They got to beat TCU, even though I know they have trouble with TCU. They're going to beat Kansas then. They're not, you know, West Virginia.
Oklahoma. They got to play Alabama.
Okay, I gave them a loss on both of those games, and maybe the Oklahoma State. But who else? Okay, Baylor. Okay, 8-4. And how would they feel? How are the folks in Austin going to feel about 8-4?
That's a three-way improvement. They better like it.
They take it and they're going to a bowl game. I mean, it's small incremental steps at this point. So I don't think they're getting ahead of themselves.
Tough times in the 5-1-2 OB. They never had problems with the football team when you were working here, sir. They always won 10 games.
Well, not always, because I was there when Makovic was the coach.
Oof.
Yeah. They didn't always win 10.
Oh, yeah. See, I forgot about the
I was there at 66-3.
When I was there with you,
yeah. You don't know what it's like to have seen them bad, but I was there for 66-3.
That's true. You just needed me to get into town for things to get rolling, even though I wasn't covering them. So.
Yeah, you didn't have to. It was just your aura.
It was my aura. All right.
So,
that's the letter after Q. All right.
Is Quinn at LSU yet?
Yeah, we dropped him off on Sunday, and the wife cried all the way home.
Oh, my God.
5.5 hours of crying.
That's where Big Daddy has to come in and soothe those tears.
It's
going to be all right. Did you should have sent Buck with him? He'd have been all right if y'all let Buck move in with him.
He's already said that he wants to bring Buck back next year when he has his own apartment, because he has to live in the dorm now. You know, yeah. That's a rule there. So, yeah, that'll be interesting when A&M plays LSU and my son comes in to try to, you know, taunt me or whatever.
Yeah, you'll be wearing the LSU gear. So,
well, Obi, we know you'll be here next week. We're speaking at the Texas Medical Association annual event. They kicked COVID's butt, and we're going to be eating barbecue and talking Texas football. Cannot wait to see you, brother.
Hey, I can't wait. And you know what? I can't wait for Texas and OU to get in the SEC. So, you know, we'll have more opportunities to hang out and break bread and talk football together.
The clock is ticking down.
Come on. Come on.
Let's go.
We're ready.
Brother, we appreciate it, man. And we will check back in probably that second week in October when things
sometime around before October 8th.
In College Station. We're going to do it.
Maybe the Aggies will be 5-0, and maybe one of you guys can hop on a plane to Tuscaloosa.
That'll be
Kirk. Know.
That'll be Kirk.
Never know.
He's the SEC columnist. That'll be Kirk.
Now, when does Texas and Oklahoma play?
Same day.
Same day.
Of course. Yeah. Same day.
We'll see. Thanks, OB.
See you later, guys.
Brother.
Very well. Bye-bye.
Duck, great podcast. We're creeping ever so closer to college football season. All over UT quarterbacks, all over Texas A&M football. Prayers out to the Wooster family. We are getting this thing up and moving steadily toward ULM on September 3rd. We'll be back next week for more football hijinks. We appreciate you joining us. That'll do it for 268. I'm Seth Golden, and he's Kirk Bowles. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com. Join Seth and Kirk every Thursday at lunch for a new episode. Archived episodes are available on iTunes and Google Android Play.